Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl.
And I'm Liz June.
And this is
Neat.
It's a weekly booze cast.
It's a history lesson with a twist.
Well, there's a nice, crisp fall feeling in the air.
Oh, God, I love fall. Right? I love it so much. I just really want to live in a place that is 75 degrees all year round. Maybe that's not a good idea, but...
Well, I mean, with global warming, we can keep our fingers crossed. I wore a flannel outside today.
And that's exciting.
Comfortable.
Yes. I love layers.
So nice. So nice.
I love it. I love breezes. I love sleeping with my window open.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. We'll see. Maybe we'll get a fall this year. It kind of depends.
We will.
New York is weird. Sometimes we get like actual temperate fall. Sometimes it's just 80 degrees until it's 20 degrees.
So. I feel like last year we had like a week of fall and then it was brutal winter.
We had a really, I mean.
Because it was like 90 degrees and then it was we had like a few days to maybe a week.
Because when we were in Salem, we had fall.
We did have fall in Salem. Salem has fall.
We're so close, but so far away from fall.
Yeah.
I guess so.
Over in Massachusetts, they've got fall there.
Hell.
I don't know if you guys have heard of it.
Good for you, Massachusetts. Well, you know, something else that I think we all associate with fall. We talked about pumpkin beer last week, but... Another style of beer that I think a lot of people are enjoying this time of year is Oktoberfest.
Yeah. And in case you're wondering why we're doing an Oktoberfest episode in September, it's because it actually starts in September. So we're not jumping the gun. Don't worry.
This is Oktoberfest in September.
Except for when it doesn't start because there is... It's been canceled.
Yeah, there's no Oktoberfest. Well, I'm sure that people in Munich and in the cities that celebrate it will have their own at-home Oktoberfest.
Yes. Oktoberfest inside your heart.
Yes. Have a little Oktoberfest inside your heart.
Dun, 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 dun,
put a pretzel there. Dun, dun, oh, that's probably bad dun, dun, for your heart. So, Liz, why don't you give us a little rundown for those that are not in the know of what exactly Oktoberfest is?
Well... Oktoberfest, what is it? You know, you might think of beer and lederhosen and polka music. Oktoberfest is an annual festival in Munich, Germany, held over a two-week period, ending on the first Sunday in October. But other Oktoberfests are not just in Munich. They're held around the world, from Brazil, who some may be surprised to find a large population of German descendants dating from the 1850s, to Cincinnati, Ohio, that is billed as the largest Oktoberfest in the U.S., hosts the world's largest chicken dance, because that is the chicken dance is polka music. Like it is a traditional German Bavarian tune. And, and the annual running of the weenies... where 100 dachshunds dressed up as hot dogs race each other.
I don't, for as many destination, like, festivals that I wish I could go to around the world, I'm kind of disappointed in myself that I haven't realized what an excellent party I'm missing out on in Cincinnati,
which
is very accessible.
I will go for the dogs dressed as hot dogs.
That alone.
That's
but then
it.
Throwing a chicken dance...
Yes.
Let alone the world's largest chicken dance.
Yeah, I mean,
there.
It's pretty special. It's pretty special. I mean, I'm surprised because I knew, like, I grew up going to Oktoberfests in Ohio, but we lived in Dayton. We didn't live in Cincinnati, but we were so close. So, like, why didn't we go to Oktoberfest in Cincinnati? It sounds great.
Wait, you know, I remember now, like, that at Kings Island, they have a whole Oktoberfest area.
So now
that kind of makes more sense.
Okay. So that's that's what we think of Oktoberfest today. But how did we get to where we are now? How did Oktoberfest start?
Well, Oktoberfest has been around for a little while. The first Oktoberfest, or sort of its origin story, was on October 12th, 1810. Basically, that was the marriage of Prince Ludwig to Princess Therese von Sachsen-Hildburghausen.
Very good.
Hey. You know, they wanted to kind of go do away with the more buttoned-up royal wedding celebration. They wanted to invite the people of their kingdoms to celebrate with them. So outside of the city gates, they had a big party. There was drinking and merriment. And a member of the Bavarian National Guard suggested that to kind of, you know, make it unique, they could do some horse racing.
Oh, that would make it a little bit more exciting.
Yeah, just something a little different, you know, horse racing.
Yeah.
If you're planning a wedding, you know, sometime in the next year or so, have you considered
horse races?
You never know. could bring the fad back. Everybody really liked this party. There was also a big parade that was part of it. And so the following year in 1811, they wanted to do it again. Now, obviously, celebrating these people's marriage year after year was a little...
That's a little weird.
A little weird.
It gets a little weird.
But the horse race they could kind of center it upon. So they decided to have this as an annual horse race. And they paired it with an agricultural festival.
Oh!
Yeah. That one in 1811 is kind of the first one that was just Oktoberfest for the sake of Oktoberfest.
Okay, cool.
And over the next few decades, like, the festival continued to expand. You know, they added carnival booths, tree climbing and bowling.
Ooh.
And rides, and just, you know, people coming from all over. The festival grew. It drew people from outside of Germany. Actually, a Greek delegation visited in 1832. And they were so impressed and motivated by this. This actually went on to inspire the reinvigoration of the Olympics. Obviously, the Olympics were, you know, from ancient Greece. But the rebirth of the Olympics, that is like the Olympics we have today, was rooted in this reimagining of it.
Yeah. So Oktoberfest is responsible for the Olympics. Right. That's kind of cool.
March and more,
the modern Olympics.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And not only did the party grow in size, it grew in length. It, you know, went to an entire 2 weeks. It historically ended on the first Sunday in October.
Okay.
And would be 2 weeks before that. Now that kind of gets moved around because there's like a German Heritage Day on the 3rd that they like to include in there. So you get a little bit extra party if the 3rd hasn't been reached yet.
That's cool.
And they also moved it up a little in the year because they wanted it to be a little warmer. So that's why it starts like mid-September and ends very early in October.
Well, that makes sense, it being like an agricultural fair.
Yeah.
The royalty then wasn't putting it on. It was the people like took it over.
Yeah, exactly. Like it was like the agricultural society that
was
centered around. And the brewers were heavily involved. There's like a parade that involves the brewers and the restaurateurs. So it's very much kind of a people's party.
Oh, this sounds so fun.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
And they, you know, they developed over time, like the beer tent, like the little beer booths grew into the massive beer halls that we kind of associate with Oktoberfest.
Mm-hmm.
They constructed large dance floors. There's like a very elaborate network of tents that you find now, like that all host different kinds of food, different kind of drink even. Cool. And a lot of parades joined.
Yes.
You know, there's the Brewers Parade, there's the Restaurateurs Parade, there's a Rifleman's Parade, there's a historical costume parade, and these have all just kind of, you know, been added on over time.
Ooh, you gotta have all the parades. Oh. Everybody's gotta have a parade.
And the parades are sort of what kicks it off. Not officially, but the morning of the first day of Oktoberfest, all these people parade in. So the fields that they were originally held on are still like the fairgrounds that are used today, and they're called Theresienwiesen, which is the fields that are named after Princess Teresa.
It means like Teresa's meadow.
Yeah. After all the parades meet in Theresienwiese.
Yeah.
The official start of the day of Oktoberfest comes at noon. This tradition started in 1950, and, you know, after everybody's arrived at the fairgrounds, there is a 12-gun salute, and the mayor of Munich taps the first keg of beer.
Exciting.
He proclaims, "Ots auf Eis," which is, it's tapped, basically.
Beautiful.
It's tapped!
Yes, great!
And there's actually like become like kind of a competition in modern times to see how many taps he can tap the keg in. Like the record is like one mayor got it in two taps. And like I think the original, the first time it was like 16, so it's a measure of strength.
Yeah, that's an improvement.
Yeah, that's what kicks it off. Obviously, they'd built up so much of a party around the festival itself. They didn't need the horses anymore to justify it. So they did away with the horse race in 1960.
Okay. Well, that brings us up to my next favorite part of Oktoberfest. I was reading, and in one article, I read that from 1970 on, the local gay organization created the Gay Days.
Yes.
And I had to read more because that was all that article gave me. And I was like, wait, what? That's it?
You're not going to... some Gay Days.
You're not going to elaborate on the Gay Days? So I did a little digging. I did a little bit more reading. So Gay Sunday is the largest LGBTQ+ event in Munich after the Pride. It's also known as Rosa Weissen Oktoberfest. And it takes place on the first Sunday in the Brarosel tent and the second Monday in the Fischer Vroni tent. It started as a meetup among friends of the Munich Lions Club, or MLC, which is a gay leather and fetish collective that brings together queer folks of similar interests and advocates for the gay community. So it was started by some friends in the leather community in, like...
It wasn't like... They were mistaken for footballers, or like a football club.
But oh my
people
god!
In the first year they did it, but the people in the tent were like, "Eh, whatever, it's still cool. You're fine."
Yeah. Oh my gosh! I didn't read that. Yeah, that's amazing.
I thought it was a sports club. I'm like, oh yeah, we're into. Let's see. Look at it as a sport.
Yeah, it's a sport. Sure. Yeah. Oh my god, that's amazing. Yeah, so I found a lot of it like on travel sites, so it's like it's a very, and it draws around like 8,000 people for those events specifically annually. So yeah, if you are, you know, if you're in the club and you're looking for something to do in October and you're close to Munich, you can, or not in October, in September, and you're close to Munich, unfortunately not this year, but in other years, there is a big gay party there. So have at it. So obviously bummer that it's canceled this year. In modern times, Oktoberfest is the largest folk festival in the world, and it draws over 6 million people annually. But again, it is canceled this year in 2020 due to COVID-19. Bummer. Wah, wah. However, it's not the first time this has happened. In its 200-plus year history, Oktoberfest has been canceled 25 times, including this year, due to either war or pandemic. It was canceled twice due to cholera outbreak.
That is not something you want to have.
No.
No. Drinking to excess.
It's gross.
Cholera.
No. Nope. So once in 1854 and again in 1873. The rest of the times were war times when it was canceled for a few years at a time, because those wars tended to take a few years. One of these war times that probably comes to mind is when Germany was under Nazi Germany rule. But actually, it was not banned during that time. The Nazis instead used Oktoberfest for their own propaganda. They hung swastika flags. They actually banned the blue and white colors of Bavaria and Munich. And they actually barred Jews from attending the festivities. So,
Nazis ruined Oktoberfest.
Yes. Okay. They made it bad. Fuck Nazis.
Nazis ruin everything, including Oktoberfest.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in short, fuck Nazis in the past and in the present. And many times, just when the economy couldn't really take it due to either recovering from war or simply inflation, one creative solution, they just really wanted Oktoberfest to happen. They wanted to have it anyway. So what they did in 1919 and 1920 was they served thin beer.
Oh, that sounds... could be marketed better.
Yeah. Well, it contained... I don't know what the German might sound nicer, but...
Maybe. And then I say that, but we have like skinny margaritas.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. But this beer contained less than 2% alcohol, so I can assume that it took a lot to get you there. But there is that non-alcoholic beer that's like it's still filling, so you're not going to drink a lot of it.
Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, I wonder if they told people that it was thin beer, or if people...
Oh, they just did it. Just saw...
Yeah, because if you couldn't taste the difference, maybe you got, like, you know, when you get that, like, placebo effect, you get psychologically drunk.
Maybe, you know, there's music, there's partying, there's festivities and food.
Yeah, I'm sure it was still fun.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm sure it's still fun. But speaking of the type of beer that they consumed.
Yes. So that is definitely a very... Obviously, very important part of all this is the beer. And there are some rules as to what beer can be served at the Oktoberfest in Munich. And what qualifies as Oktoberfest beer is because we see it in the store and we tend to think about it as a style of beer. And it more or less is.
Hmm.
But sort of where that style comes from is based in the history of Oktoberfest itself. So the beer that you encounter at Oktoberfest is Marzen beer. What it's referred to as.
Okay.
Marzen beer. Marzen means March.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah. So just if you're keeping track, it's called Oktoberfest. It happens in September, and while there you drink March beer.
Oh, okay. But, cool.
But this all makes sense, actually.
I'm assuming you're going to elaborate. Yes.
So the reason they traditionally drank Marzen beer with Oktoberfest is because back in the day, before refrigeration, fermenting beer in the summer months was a real, like, crapshoot. Just because fermentation doesn't work great in high temperatures. So they would, and also, like, in the summer they had their fields to tend to. They had crops to tend to. So they would brew beer up through, like, March. And then they would rest that beer in casks over the summer months while they focused on their farming. And then as the nights grew colder, they would have this slightly aged Marzen, March beer, the beer from March,
mm-hmm.
that they would drink to celebrate the harvest. So it just makes sense that that is the beer they would have been drinking at the early Oktoberfest.
Okay, all right, yeah. I buy it.
The style of beer, it was typically a very, like, well-kilned malt. It was a very roasted malt, so it would have been a darker beer. Okay. Really, most German beer pre-19th century was dark beer. Lighter lagers were to come, but this was a dark lager.
Mm-hmm. Dunkel.
Yes, Dunkel.
Dunkel.
Dunkelweiss. It wasn't until the 1870s that the traditional Oktoberfest beer began to change, closer to what we recognize it today.
Mm-hmm.
There was a popular trend. It sort of originated in Great Britain was the birthplace of the pale lager. And all throughout Europe, that was the popular style. So a man by the name of Joseph Sedlmeyer, who was a brewer who worked what would eventually become Spaten, which is one of the big brewers in Munich.
Okay.
He created an amber lager in more of the Vienna style. It was first poured at the 1872 Oktoberfest. And even though it was higher priced because it was a little bit of a newer, difficult process, it sold incredibly well, sold out. And so all of the other brewers started mimicking that amber style, the slightly lighter beer. And that became more of synonymous with Oktoberfest or Marzen style. Now, that style of beer, which is still what we think of, especially the people that mimic the Marzen style, like American brewers or craft mm-hmm. brewers, this is still what you find today. It's a medium bodied, it's very much a red amber color. It's got kind of a spicy malt character. It's a very still very clean palate, and it complements fall very well. It's meant to be the in between of the light crisp summer beers and the heavier winter beers to come.
Mm-hmm.
Around the same time that the lighter amber Marzen styles caught on, refrigeration was also introduced.
Oh, handy.
Yeah. So, not having to have beer rest over the course of the summer, being able to brew beer specifically for the event became more of an option. So that mm-hmm. definitely helped a different style catch on. And nowadays, at the actual Oktoberfest in Munich festivities, you can get the amber, the Marzen, the medium bodied Oktoberfest, but a lot of it's actually more of a lighter, paler, sometimes they call it fest beer, and it's more of a light lager. That's just based on the popular beer that people like to drink there. So you sort of, you have a couple, there's a bit of a variance as to what can fall under Marzen style.
All right.
Marzen style usually denotes an amber beer that has a good medium body and a spiced malt. But when we talk about Oktoberfest, you're sort of talking about two things. You're talking about the beers that we associate with the Marzen style, and then just the beers that are allowed to be served at Oktoberfest.
Ah.
And that's, there is a difference there. So there's only 6 breweries that are legally allowed to serve at Oktoberfest. They have to be within the Munich city limits.
Mm-hmm.
They also have to follow a set of beer purity rules that have been around for a couple centuries.
Oh, my.
And these are called the... The beer has rules. This isn't just for Oktoberfest. These are German beer laws.
Oh, okay.
Reinheitsgebot. These are the German beer laws. They date back to 1487 in Munich, and they were adopted widely across Bavaria in 1516. These original laws stated that the only ingredients that could be used in beer are water, barley, and hops. Now, if that sounds like it's missing an important ingredient, like yeast?
Oh, yeah.
it is. But that's more because while they understood that yeast was a thing, they didn't quite think of it as an ingredient because it was more of like a natural indoctrination at this time.
Okay.
So it was more of like a mechanism transferred readily batch to batch, a fixture of brewing, if you will.
Right.
At the time. The 1516 laws did a couple of things too. They limited the price of beer. They limited the profit margins allowed. So people that were buying beer from a brewery to sell like at their, you know, their tap house, like they could only sell it for so much.
Hmm.
They also introduced penalties for making impure beer.
Oh.
They would take all your beer away.
Remove the impure beer.
Wow. And these rules were introduced for a couple reasons. Some are sort of theorized more than others. But for one, the limit of grain to just barley meant that supplies of rye and wheat were safe for bakers, basically to ensure that there wouldn't be competition so that the cost of bread would stay affordable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think good looking out.
Yeah, that's smart. That's nice.
It also highlighted the style of Bavarian brewing that was already in place. They brew these very simple, pure beers. Northern German beers got a little bit funkier, a little bit more experimental. So this was sort of, this style enforcement made Bavarian style beers the dominant style of beer.
Yeah.
And also, just as a, you know, it's always fun when we get anything like magical involved. There were a lot of the additives that were associated with paganism.
Oh. Yeah,
like adding like wormwood or belladonna or henbane to your beer.
Yes.
So they wanted to get all that out of the mix. They wanted to get the, yeah. Aww. I mean, I was excited too. But no, this was also to keep the pagan rituals out of your beer.
Come on, let us have a little bit. Just a little bit of magic in the beer. Just a little bit.
I like the idea of, I'll drink some magical pagan beer.
Is belladonna poison, though?
I think it is. Oh. I think in certain forms.
Yeah, okay, maybe not that.
But, you know.
But a little bit of...
Just a little bit. Just a little bit of magic in my beer.
Just a little bit of magic beer, please. Can I have a little bit of pagan?
It's the fall. That's when we get to have a little bit of magic.
I want a little bit of debauchery in
just
my beer.
Just a little bit. It's already beer. Yeah. What does purity laws on beer?
If Germans are serious about something, I would just let it go.
That's true. Well, that, you know, that's been the quintessential style of beer in Germany. There are lots of things that break these laws that go beyond these very simple. They have developed, I should say, in the modern era to include yeast.
Okay, that's good.
They can include other malted grains, so it's not just barley. It's really just these rules operate more as a labeling device in modern Germany. So if you have other things in your beer, you can't technically call what you're making beer.
Okay. You could call it wormwood surprise.
I guess so. Or you kind of have to go through some hoops to get special permission to call it beer.
Okay.
Like gluten-free beer this is just one of the examples, but like there are a couple brands of gluten-free beer that are allowed to call themselves beer, even though they're gluten-free, so they technically don't include the grains.
They're gluten pagans.
Yes. So, you know, it's more like getting to put it on your label that you live up to the beer rules and you are real German beer. That's kind of a point of pride. But even German brewers themselves have pushed back against this because a lot, especially with the craft beer movement,
mm-hmm.
With other styles, like neighboring styles of beer getting so much attention and acceptance in the world market, to follow the German beer laws, German brewers are very limited.
Ah.
So In 2015, they actually all came together and, like, signed on to allow other natural ingredients.
We want to put stuff in our beer!
Basically. So nowadays, the beer that you are drinking, if you are at Oktoberfest, not this year, but in years to come, it'll be held to the German beer laws, and it will be from one of those allowed breweries within the Munich city limits. A lot of them we get here in America, like we get Hofbräu, Löwenbräu, Paulaner, and Spaten. The other ones are Augustiner and Hacker Shore. So those are the six Munich breweries that are allowed at Oktoberfest. And the beer they're brewing there is Oktoberfest beer. That is what it's called.
Because they make it.
Yes.
So it's all the stuff, all the beer they make for Oktoberfest is Oktoberfest beer because they made it.
Yeah.
For Oktoberfest.
And they'll brew, like, because there was a while where they were doing, I'm sad that this is not a thing anymore because it sounded really cool. Maybe they bring it back from time to time. But for the 200th celebration of Oktoberfest, they made a representation of what the original Oktoberfest would have been like. They made, like, a little village that had, like, traditional games.
Aww.
And, like, you know, the old school beer tents. Like, they just brought, and, like, music that didn't have any sort of amplifiers or anything. That lasted from, like, 2010 to 2016. They kept that around. But for that, these breweries brewed a traditional old school, like, dark Marzen style beer. To mimic that beer that they would have originally had. So,
okay.
So, you know, you might find some lighter Marzens, you might find some darker Marzens at Oktoberfest. But the style that gets copied outside of Germany brewers kind of fall back to that same amber Marzen, like, medium malt style. So you might get some cool different things at actual Oktoberfest. And I should say, it's also not just beer. Wine tents are always a thing.
Oh.
There is one tent. There's a really cool breakdown of, like, all of the tents, like, that you can find. Like, they all have official names. And there is one tent that I can't remember the name. It was a cool German word. But it is, like, exotic cocktails, pastries, like,
okay,
and champagne.
Yes.
And I'm like, that's where I'll be. Like,
yeah.
You can have your cool meat tents and your beer tents. I'll be in the champagne pastry tent.
I just imagine, Taylor, you stumbling into this tent to be like, oh, well, this is where my festival is.
I live here now.
This is where I'll be.
That is where I would love. That's where I think I go when I die. I go to that tent.
Yes.
So, I don't know.
Except for Gay Sunday.
Well, that's, yeah. I mean, that's, I've never participated. I've worked Oktoberfest events at bars before, but man, I would love to, maybe next year, but I would love to go to actual Oktoberfest.
Oh, that would be fun. That would be so much fun.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
So we also thought that it would be fun. This is not ingrained in Oktoberfest history, but we want to talk about Das Boot, which I'm talking about, of course, like, the modern version is it's a glass shaped like a boot that you drink beer out of. And that is very popular in Oktoberfests, especially in America. But they do, like, it is a thing in Germany, too. Let's talk about Das Boot, which we'll get into that name, because that's also a very fun thing. We have the American perspective, because we're Americans. We can't have any other perspective. So what we have heard of it is always as Das Boot. The tradition of drinking beer from a boot actually started in the military in Europe as a hazing ritual. Young men were initiated into their troop by having to drink an entire boot of beer from the literal boot of a fellow soldier.
Oh no.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Yeah, and it morphed into more of like a prideful tradition. There are even stories of troops being offered a drink from the general's boot for a battle won. However, this was more likely an expression of motivation, like, okay, boys, if you boys win this, you can have a drink from my boot, like something crazy. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That would encourage me.
I think,
like, how about a glass, dude?
Well, maybe it was, I mean, maybe it was like the volume of beer, or like, I don't know.
I'll give you a whole booth's worth of beer.
Okay, so here. Okay, so according to that legend.
All right. Raise your expectations.
So the legend that I'm talking about with the general is this. It was started by, supposedly, it was started by a Prussian general who promised his troops he would quaff a beer from his own leather boot in exchange for a win on the battlefield. And then it does get better, because when his men proved victorious, he commissioned a glass likeness his boot to spare himself the humiliation and grossness of drinking foot beer.
Nobody wants foot beer.
No one wants foot beer.
I think that's called kombucha.
Kombucha burn. Burn on kombucha.
I drink it all the time, but it's definitely foot beer.
Okay. All right. Well, arguable. But this, like, kind of started a thing because he made this memento. And again, this is legend. It's drinking history, so legend. We don't know who the Prussian general was. We don't know, but at some point, someone made a glass replica of their boot, and it started a trend. So later, like, boots were engraved. They were given as gifts to honor servicemen or retirees. So the boot drinking vessels, as like, just, you know, not just like a like valor in the military, appeared first in England in the early 19th century, and they were modeled after riding boots and served at hunting lodges and were often rimmed with silver. So these were very fancy boot glasses.
That's such a funny, like, dichotomy. Like, it's a very fancy shoe to drink out of. Now you're still drinking out of something that's modeled on a boot. Okay.
I guess you could drink out of like a glass slipper.
I mean, that's a little bit
that's very
sexier
fancy
than a boot,
but it doesn't hold as much liquid.
I guess that's true.
That's the thing.
Maybe a platform.
Maybe a platform.
Can I get
would
a glass
be fun.
Platform?
Yeah, if the platform were also hollow.
Yeah, like it's all the way down in.
Yeah, that'd be good. Hmm. That's a good design. That's patented. No one can take that.
Yeah, don't steal my idea. Glass platform.
So by the mid-19th century, the beer boot made its way to Germany and became very popular. And by that I'm saying, well, maybe, like, if the legend of the Prussian general was not completely true, then, like, we know that by the mid-19th century, beer boots were in Germany. They liked them. And then after World War I, Americans brought the beer boot back to the U.S., and companies began producing and selling their own boots to beer drinkers. They made cowboy boots. They're very popular in the Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the boot didn't really reach popularity in the United States until 2006, when a little movie called Beer Fest came on the scene. So the movie shows a German drinking contest, which accumulates with chugging from a 2-liter beer boot aptly named Das Boot. However, I left you a little Easter egg earlier. Here's that surprise. Das Boot does not mean boot in German.
The boot?
Yeah, no, it translates to the boat.
Oh, the boat!
Yeah, and actually, The Boat is the title of a famous German movie from 1981 starring Jürgen Prochnow, who also stars in Beer Fest.
What? How did the writers of Beer Fest weave this intricate, like, cultural misunderstanding?
I don't know.
Into their casting.
I've
seen that movie.
It was definitely on purpose.
It's a very stupid movie.
Yeah, I think maybe we should watch it sometime. I've never seen it.
Yeah, I feel like I have, like, it's kind of silly, it's kind of bad memories, but then it's also from 2006,
yeah.
You said? So maybe it's probably a lot worse than I remember it.
Oh, it's always, I think movies from the 2000s that were bad already are a lot worse now.
Yeah.
They're so offensive.
It's definitely in that, like, can't hardly wait, like, Not another teen movie wheelhouse of...
Yeah. You know. I mean, but just like oh, no, ooh. you can't make this movie now. No. You can't say that. You can't do that. That's, no, that's not okay. It wasn't actually okay then, but
no.
we let it happen. But if you care to know, the German word for boot is Stiefel.
Oh.
So the proper word for beer boot in German is Bierstiefel.
Bierstiefel.
Yeah. And a 2-liter Bierstiefel holds about 67 ounces of liquid, which is almost as much of a 6-pack of 12-ounce bottles or cans. So,
wow.
So that's, it's a lot.
That's
it's
a lot of beer.
It's a big boot.
I guess I've never worked to be better at this skill, but when it comes to chugging beer, there's nothing that I don't want to chug beer. I don't want to be good at it. I don't even like drinking beer quickly. Like, when I go to, like, beer halls that have, like, the big, like, the liter option or whatever, I don't want that.
No, because it's going to sit. I'm not gonna finish it. Unless you're, like, splitting it with people.
Sure. And they frown on that. You're like, give me one of the big guys and 2 glasses. They're like, no. That's not how they work.
No. I mean, I guess I was thinking of, like, a pitcher of beer.
Yeah, a pitcher is... a pitcher. But I mean, like, you know, like a beer hall. Like, where they give you, like, the stein.
Oh, yeah.
Halfway through, I'm just going to be drinking hot, flat beer.
No.
Because I don't drink beer that fast.
No.
And I don't even, like, whatever it's like, let's chug a can of beer.
Shotgun,
like,
a beer?
Yeah.
Like, have you ever done that?
I've shotgunned many a beer. And I will, if asked, I will take part because, well, I cave easily to peer pressure. But I'll never try very hard. It's like, oh, I lost. But oh,
it's,
no.
It's There's always like...
less foamy beer in my system.
It's like Natty Light, like, which is like watered down beer, right? Like, you don't do that to nice beer. You do it to shitty beer.
Yeah, this is true. But it's...
I'm not saying I like to do it.
I don't... But... I don't know. Like...
Have you ever done a keg stand?
Have I?
For those who don't know...
No, I've never done a keg stand. I have done a beer bong.
I've done both.
Okay. Tell me about your keg stand experience.
Oh, I just did it at a party. For those who don't know, a keg stand is when you actually... You have to have some friends help you because you like basically do a headstand or a handstand. You are hanging upside down and you basically put your mouth like close to or on the tap of the keg and you just drink as much as you can until they let you be right side up, I guess. I don't really remember. I think I did it like once. There was like a party house where I went to college and it was like they named the house the Shindig.
Oh,
so
no.
So there
I
was
can
always
smell
parties
that
with...
without even knowing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just smells like natty ice soaked into a shag carpet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank God they didn't have carpet.
small favors.
It was all like hardwood, but so they could just hose it down at the end. But, you know, there was always like beers, like the bathtub was like filled with ice and there's beers in the bathtub and all that shit. And yes, I have done a beer bong before, which is for those who don't know, it is when you attach a funnel to a long tube and someone pours a lot of beer into it and holds it up while you chug it from the tube. And that's what that is. And why does that exist?
Yeah.
No one knows.
Definitely never did a keg stand because the first step of that is some sort of acrobatic maneuver that I can't. There is nothing about Taylor Smurl that can do a headstand or a flip. I walk and sometimes I run and those are the options for me.
If someone's holding you, which is not...
Probably not going to happen.
You know, you got to really trust those people.
Yeah, right? I don't... That's... nothing about that works for me. But even with the beer bong, the one time I did it... I think it was my senior year in college and I was... at one of my roommate's houses, her younger brother and his friends were hanging out. So these were like, you know, like younger kids, and they were excited to have some older girls hang out with them, and we were playing a card game, and if you got a certain card you had to do a beer bong, and I just like didn't want to do it to begin with, but it was also like, I don't know, this, there's no other time in my life I guess is gonna happen.
Yeah, I guess why it's like it's always like that. It's like a okay, fuck it, why not. Like it's not like a, you know what, I think I'll go to a party tonight and do a beer bong.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm going to go do a keg stand. I mean, I guess there are people who think of it like that.
Well, I didn't, like, that's the thing. There was no Greek life in art school. We did not have, we barely had a campus, let alone, like, fraternities or sororities. So I'd be like, is any of the horrible things you can do with beer outside of just drinking way too much of it, I didn't do any of those things.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, like beer pong. I never understood beer pong.
I liked beer pong because we had a chance to try to improve at a skill.
I can't. For me, it was just like, I just want to drink a beer. Like, I'm excited to drink a beer. I don't want to wait until, like, it's not a punishment. That's how all drinking games are to me. It's like,
but again, you do it with shitty beer. You don't do it with good beer.
I would rather just drink a good beer far away from a competitive situation. You have combined two things I hate the most. Unnecessary competition and shitty beer.
Yeah, you're right. At the Shindig, they also had Beer Olympics.
Oh, no.
Which was like an annual thing, I guess. But
well, there, it was also inspired was by the 1832 Oktoberfest celebration.
You know what? I think indirectly, I don't think they knew about it, but it was a bunch of beer games. It was a bunch of drinking games with beer so that you could, you know, not die. So, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, what a strange time in my life.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a lot of people go. That's sort of weird.
Well, they had a backyard. They had a bonfire, so it was more like, I'm gonna like get together and like hang out outside. And there's some games going on, and they involve drinking Natty Light. Fun. Yeah, it was fun.
Would you drink Natty Light now?
No.
No, that was so many no's.
No.
So many no's.
I'm sure that the games they had in the traditional historical replica of original Oktoberfest tents were more fun.
I love how much tree climbing seemed to be a part of old school Oktoberfest, because you know what? I might not want to compete for shitty beer, but if you gave me some good beer and then said, yo, Taylor, climb that tree, I'd be like, yeah, I can do that.
I love climbing trees. I want to do that. That's the kind of drinking game I want.
Oh, yeah, no, if that was a thing, let's get drunk and try and climb trees. Yeah. It's still probably a bad idea for me because I'm only so coordinated.
Are there mats underneath the tree?
I
don't know.
They're Germans. Do you think they're mats?
I mean, I don't know. If you're German, tell us about how serious are they about safety there? Because in the U.S., I feel like you would have to have regulation mats under there, you know. But that's because Americans tend to do stupid things and get really, really drunk. So if that were a thing... Like, if that were a thing in the U.S. that, like, at a giant festival party where you're drinking a lot, there is a event that you climb trees, like, some idiot would be wasted and trying to climb a tree and just fall out of a tree and kill themselves.
Yeah. Or like, climb the tree and then hide and try to push other people out of the tree.
Yeah. That would be.
That would be a whole other game that we would have invented.
I love, there was like,
surprise, diggity tree.
Speaking of Americans ruin everything, there wasn't, this is not booze related, but I saw like a post like recently about like this little robot that made it all the way across Canada. It was like a hitchhiking robot that made it all the way across Canada.
I can't hear sad stories about small robots.
And then when it got to, and then it went in the U.S. and it got to Philadelphia and was beaten to death.
Okay, I didn't like that.
I'm sorry.
I wish you would have warned. Some people want to know if like an animal gets hurt in a film.
You want to know about robots.
I want to know if a small robot is harmed. I need to know because I can't.
I'm sure they can rebuild him.
All he wanted to do was...
hitchhike.
Just a hitchhiking robot.
Mm-hmm. He made it all the way across Canada.
That makes me so sad. Sometimes, oh, I think about, like, those, like, robots that get stranded on Mars because they get flipped over.
Mm.
They made it all the way there, and then they just are upside down.
Aw, man.
It's just sad.
Poor little buddies. Maybe someday someone will go there and flip them all back.
Sometimes I just think about lonely robots and cry.
Aw.
But you know what?
That makes me sad, too. Well.
Wow.
This has been a robot podcast.
You know what? It's not, but it could be.
It could be. Could be a tiny hitchhiking robot podcast.
The fact that it's tiny.
It's not that tiny. It's like, you know, it's like the size of a doll.
Oh, that's the size that I want a robot to be.
Aww.
Well, anyway.
Anyway, not to end on a sour note.
How do you bring it back from tiny robot?
Okay, we have
death.
To find something to find something happy.
I'm just going to go to my happy place, which is the ketchup robot.
The
that
ketchup
little
robot.
Ketchup, the little robot that just sprays ketchup everywhere. He tries so hard. I'm visualizing the ketchup robot, and I'm in a good place.
I'm going to find the ketchup robot.
Ketchup robot.
Oh, yeah. He loves ketchup. He's got little arms.
He's got buff arms. And he just poops it everywhere.
He's a buff ketchup boy.
And he makes such a mess.
Aw,
but
he loves
it. But he's so proud.
He's so proud. Look at him. He's drawing with his ketchup. Oh, he sees some hot dogs.
He's an artiste.
He said that one needs a little bit more. Okay, good. So if you need a pick-me-up, please YouTube search ketchup robot, and there
you
go.
That's the place I go in my head when I count to 10 and make the world go away.
Yes.
Well, all right. So, obviously, Real Oktoberfest is canceled, but, you know, maybe this is a great time to, in your safe pod with the people that you can safely be around, pick up some Oktoberfest beers. Try them out. Mm-hmm. Maybe have some traditional German delicacies.
Yeah, maybe break out your lederhosen.
Yeah, make some spätzle.
Do the chicken dance. Play some polka music.
Hang out with your wiener dog. I guess that works.
Yes, dress. If you have a Dachshund, dress them up like a hot dog.
And over on our video companion, we will be trying some. We just got, you know, some of the bigger breweries Oktoberfest offerings, along with some smaller local brews, mm-hmm. local-ish.
Yeah.
And we're going to be trying them out and showing you some very simple German beer cocktail riffs that we're going to do. So
join us for that.
All right.
It'll be fun. Thank you to Absurdist for our theme music. Thank you to everybody who's tweeted and retweeted about the show. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Neat Boozecast. And don't forget to check out our YouTube channel for videos about booze. That's what it's about.
That's what we do. That's it. Well, I've been Taylor Sproul.
And I've been Liz June.
And this has been Neat.